Upper 80s at the coast. Santa Cruz will be at 86. Watsonville, 83. Carmel, 76 degrees this afternoon. Gilroy, the warm spot at 98. Morgan Hill, not far behind at 96. 91 today in San Jose. 10:06, time for hour one of the Saturday special. Here's MZ.
Hi, Rick O'Shea. How are you, Rick O'Shea?
I'm fine. How are you? Michael Zwirling. I don't know.
Pretty good, pretty good, pretty good. The sun is shining. That's all it takes for me to be in a good mood. Okay, we're gonna have a great show today. People are all excited. They've been sending me emails. I was telling the people in the studio here, people I don't know and people I do know have been sending emails saying, I'm so excited about your Saturday special on Agenda 21.
Got a call from Michigan and Florida this morning who heard about it.
Michigan and Florida?
Michigan and Florida will be calling in later.
Oh, fantastic. This is really cool. Well, but before we get started here, I want to introduce my mom, Kay. Hey, Ma, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Michael.
Your smiling face is back at the radio station.
Yes.
And your checkbook, no, not your checkbook, your pen is ready to inscribe your books to anybody who feels like coming on down to 2300 Portola Drive.
That's true. And I think if they would buy one book, it's $15, and if they buy two, it's $25.
Oh, my God.
They're wonderful books, and they're easy reading because they're a compilation of about 14 years of commentaries, and no commentary is longer than 4 minutes. So it's really easy reading.
Yeah, definitely. And so they make great gifts, too.
It's not the holiday season.
Oh, well, it's Father's Day, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that would be wonderful. So perfect time to come on down and pick up a Kay's book or two. And 100% of the proceeds go to your favorite radio station.
Absolutely.
And there is nothing skimmed off the top for administrative fees or anything. All of it goes to keeping us going here. So we hope you will come on down and say hey. So, okay, Ma, have a good one.
You too.
Okay, take care. Now, let us start the show officially.
Good morning. A brighter day is here. Good morning. May we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes. We've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today you know. On KSCO Radio.
Behind-the-scenes maneuvering going on here, gang. Welcome to hour number one of the Saturday special on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO. It's going to be a hot one today, and we hope you'll stay tuned and enjoy it. I'm sure you'll learn something, and you will be able to participate in the program.
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
I don't know if you've paid attention, but over the years, Agenda 21 has been mentioned many times on your favorite radio station. But this Saturday, we have an epic debate planned that you won't want to miss. Developed by the United Nations in 1992, Agenda 21 deals with sustainable development, depopulation, and, believe many, the ultimate elimination of private property and all the rights associated therewith. Santa Cruz County is a, if not the, leader in the implementation of Agenda 21, even though our Congressman Sam Farr denied knowing anything about Agenda 21 as recently as last year during an interview with Dr. Bill Wattenberg on KSCO Presents. Yet there is an official letter signed by Congressman Farr written in 1997 in which he clearly states his support for Agenda 21. Since Farr clearly doesn't want to talk about Agenda 21, we chose not to bother him. But Mike Rotkin has stepped up to the plate and will be here to debate Michael and Joanne Shaw on the next KSCO special this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, right here on We Appreciate Mike Rotkin because he's not a sneaky weasel like most of the other politicians. Radio, AM 1080 KSCO. You know, there's smiling faces in the studio here, but everybody is very serious about this particular issue. And so, you know, we like to have our little share of levity that sort of makes people more comfortable listening to the radio and so forth. But this is a very serious topic. We're happy to be able to bring you a discussion on this topic. Now, Michael and Joanne Shaw are here in the studio representing the opponents of Agenda 21. Mike Rotkin is here in the studio representing the proponents of Agenda 21. If it seems a little unbalanced, let me explain here, because we have two versus one, I guess. I know Mike is saying no big deal. And which is another thing I love about Mike. He's so secure in his position. You know, he says, I'll debate anybody, anytime, anywhere on any subject, which is really cool. But I want you all to know that I had a nice chat with Gary Patton, day before yesterday. Or maybe it was yesterday. I called him up at the law office and I said, Gary, it would be great if you could come on. And I realize it's short notice, and if you say no, you know, for scheduling, I'll understand. He says, well, Michael, that is, I am saying no because of scheduling, and because I have to make a speech in front of some, you know, group. And he said, I said, would you have said yes? I don't know. I would definitely say yes if it was the issue on UCSC growth or water or something. I don't know. Everybody thinks I know a lot more about Agenda 21 than I really do. So that was Gary. And so, so here we are, with the three of us in the studio. Who wants to comment on, who wants to start the ball rolling, you know, with a not too dry and not too long encapsulated, statement of what Agenda 21 is. Okay, let's Mike Rotkin. Perfect. Let's do it, Mike.
I got this off of Wikipedia.
Okay.
So, and first of all, just so people know, I'm aware of Agenda 21. I've been aware of it for a while. People bring it up at local meetings here in Santa Cruz. I went to a conference of ICLEI. The name, I never remember the name for it. It's look it up here. Just a second. Sorry, dead air time here for a moment. But I'm looking up the ICLEI stands for International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, and that's a group that works to carry out the Agenda 21. And I went to a conference of theirs in Utah about 6 or 7, maybe 8 years ago. So I'm aware of Agenda 21, and on the other hand, I can't say that it's been some big thing that I've been involved in or active in my life. So last night I went on the internet and got a bunch of information, first with Wikipedia and then for some you know additional sources, looked at some of their original source documents and some of the opponents' concerns. So I'll just say really briefly, and I'm reading this from their initial charge. Agenda 21 is a non-binding voluntary action plan for sustainable development. It's a document of about 300 pages. It was passed at a conference in Rio de Janeiro, and as Michael Z said earlier, in 1992 in Rio, Brazil. And basically it was an attempt to sort of look globally at some of the large environmental issues that the world was confronting and trying to figure out what are some things that could be done that would make our world a little more sustainable than it had been. And it was initially, as I say, it was a voluntary plan. It wasn't intended to be something imposed on anybody. It addresses four major areas. The first is poverty, health, pollution. The second is the conservation of resources. The third is an attempt to strengthen the role of women, youth, businesses and workers, and indigenous peoples around the globe in the process of deciding what our future is going to be. And fourth is the implementation, the use of technology, science, education, international institutions, and financial mechanisms to try and figure out how would we make the world more sustainable. So that's what Agenda 21 is. It's a UN effort that came out of a meeting, a conference on environment, global environment in 1992 in Brazil. And it has lots of countries that have signed up as members and some states, including the state of California. There's The United States belongs as a member of this. It's not, it's a non-binding, it's not a treaty. It's not binding in any way. So it's not a law. There's nothing from this that's imposed on anybody in the United States. This was, we joined this when George, H.W. Bush was president. And, I know there's a, looking through the media and from what I know from my own experience here in Santa Cruz, there's a lot of people that are concerned that this is going to be imposed, that they're developing a plan that would be imposed on people in some way. And that's not what Agenda 21 is about from my perspective. So I'll stop there and you know, others can say more about it.
So Mike Shaw, I assume you have no problem with Mike Rotkin's
such facetious comments.
No. With your description, with his description of what it's about, or you might differ on whether it's imposed or not.
Right.
But
what Mike talks about is accurate as far as it goes. Let's talk a moment about the non-binding nature of Agenda 21. Agenda 21 could not get through the U.S. Senate as a treaty. And so the plan was to make it non-binding. George Bush brought it home to the United States, infused it into every federal agency.
Clinton did that.
And then Clinton came up with his President's Council on Sustainable Development. So I can tell you that while it's not law in terms of the international treaty aspect, that all elements of Agenda 21 have been imposed in every county in the United States through federal agencies. Now, one of the boilerplate programs for Agenda 21 was laid out in a few cities across the United States. Santa Cruz was one of them. So what we have with Agenda 21, it's, Mr. Rockin characterized it in certain ways. Let me characterize it a little differently, using their own symbology for its explanation. Agenda 21 relies on what's called the three E's. It's a little graph that you'll find on Agenda 21 related entities across the country. Every town I go to speak in has these organizations, usually NGOs, that have the three E symbol. And what the three E's are these. First, it's economy. It's about shifting economy from private enterprise to public-private partnership. We see public-private partnerships dawning all over Santa Cruz, all over California, and all over the United States. Well, what's a public-private partnership? Well, that's a sweet term for corporatism. You see, Agenda 21 is not a left-wing imposition. Agenda 21 is the synthesis between the left-wing and the right-wing. The economics of Agenda 21 is right-wing economics regarding the conflagration of business and government as a partnership. If you're not a partner with government in Santa Cruz, try to be a land developer. You've got to be on the inside, say a Swenson, a partner with government in government's objectives. Now, the second element of Agenda 21, as reflected on their 3E chart, is equity. And equity means shifting the nature of our law from one based upon equal justice, the concept that arises in the Declaration of Independence, to a concept of social justice, meaning that you have to belong to one of these classes that Mike Rockin talked about in his four characterizations, indigenous or female. It's all about classifying people and having a system of law that treats you in accordance with the classification that you fall in. Now, the third E is called environment. But by environment, they don't mean simply clean air and clean water. They mean nature before man. And that's where the call in Agenda 21 comes for the massive reduction in human population.
Okay. Thank you, Mike Shaw here. Mike Rotkin, any response to any of that? Can you live with any of with any
no,
or,
no,
or this, most
obviously
of it?
Some parts of it are true. I think that it is there is an emphasis on the importance of public-private partnerships. I think I see that slightly differently and be interested in discussion of where this might go. If we lived in a world that was like the United States in 1790, when 80% of the people didn't work for a wage, they owned a small farm or a craft shop or something, you didn't need an education to do your job because if you got an education, and very few people did a formal education. It was so you could read the Bible or so you could be an educated person, but not because it was necessary for your to be economically successful. There was no medical system that you'd want to participate in. They were busy bleeding people back in those days, you know, for their medical problems. There were extended families that people lived in who allowed them to take care of the needs of their children. Older people, you didn't need to have a retirement system or something because people looked after their grandparents. You had these extended families, again, living often on farms or where they had their ability to support their families economically with what was going on. And I could go on with this picture, but what I'm trying to say is you didn't need a government. You didn't need a very big one. It's possible for Thomas Jefferson in that year, 1790, to say that government is best which governs least. You know, leave us alone. We've got our family. We've got our farm. We can live. We're not tied into some international economy or even a national or regional economy. But our world has changed dramatically, and we've reached a point where it is important that somebody who wants to do some be involved in an economic enterprise in a local community, like in Santa Cruz, figure out what the impact of what they're doing is going to be on the people that are around them. They're not on a separate farm. 90% of the people now are working for a salary or a wage. We're interconnected with each other. I don't like it much, but if it weren't for our trade with China, our economy would be completely in a mess. We might even agree about a bunch of things that are wrong with the international economy and what it does right now. But the idea that you could simply let each individual business, each individual free enterprise business, make its own decisions in isolation from what's going on around them, it ends up in a disaster for not just for the environment, but just for the quality of life of people that are living in the community. So the idea that a business person who wants to do something in Santa Cruz is going to face regulations, is going to be asked to work with others. Now, I don't think it's like there's some conspiracy of insiders and outsiders, but no private enterprise is going to make a suggestion for carrying on some activity, whether it's building housing or whether it's building a new business or something else, without going through a planning department, without figuring out what the impacts of their activity is going to be on the people around them. So I think you're seeing that as something of a conspiracy. Maybe that's not the word you use for it, but that businesses are forced to be into a connection with government. And when you say that there's a private public partnership, the public part of that partnership, at least in theory, I don't think it's as good as it should be, but at least in theory, is the people themselves. In other words, it's not like there's an agreement between some alien government and these private enterprises. It's an agreement that takes place between the private businesses and the community as represented by elected officials and the people that they hire to run the bureaucracy that's there. And so that's, just to wrap this up, I think that's what's probably very different in our two visions about this. I see a private-public partnership as a way to keep, it's not attacking private business. It's saying private business needs to work with government to figure out how we can carry on enterprises that don't destroy our community. You might have a different expression of that. I'd like to be interested in hearing what it is.
Well, I do. I think that what's happened in Santa Cruz, I can point to many examples, including my own as a landowner, is that if you're not part of the inner crowd, you simply don't do anything. There's no opposition to the use of my land except from the inner crowd. In my own case, we've taken land and probably made it the most ecologically sensitive land in the state by a process of 30 years of weeding, hand weeding by a crew of guys working 6 days a week. And the result of that is that since I'm not a buddy with Ellen Peary or with what was their name? Robley Levy. I, for 30 years, have been on a piece of land zoned for 30 houses and can't build my own. Now, that's a failure of a system that defies the idea of American ideals. And I think what I hear you talk about is that the ideals of America are no longer relevant because we've got this complicated society that's been created by the forces of internationalism. What we're talking about is the idea, the immutable ideas upon which America was based, the idea that each human being has a life of his own. And now we say, no, the life of your own has to be controlled by the community, and we, the elected officials, deem what the community interests are, and simply, you, sir, don't meet those goals, but you, sir, you do. Now, that's a system not based upon American principles, which again I say are immutable. Even though society changes, information grows. They are immutable ideas that have been defeated by this system of encroaching internationalism as implemented through the Agenda 21 program.
Wow. So, again, I don't doubt that there are regulations, let's say in Santa Cruz County, about development that make, I don't know where your property is, but that make it very difficult to develop, for example, outside of the urban core. This didn't come from Agenda 21, because this was going on before Agenda 21. This was took place in the 70s in this county. So it wasn't like Agenda 21 came in and did this to us or something. But the local community made a decision that we would have a more sustainable, and that doesn't even use a big word for it, we would have a much more enjoyable community if we developed inside of the city areas that exist. We have four major cities, and Aptos, although it's not a city, is an urban area, let's face that. And that people would develop most of the density and the actual enterprises and low-income housing, things like that, in this center core, and that the area outside of the urban boundary line would be left much more undeveloped. And it didn't mean that people couldn't have some houses or that you couldn't develop some things out in those outer areas. And obviously you can have agriculture and other kinds of enterprises going on. It wasn't like it's going to be left a virgin forest or something. But you wouldn't see much development take place in outside of that core. Now, that might be a bad idea. People could agree or disagree about how that works. But that was a decision sort of made by a community. And I think since the United States started, before we became a country, we're still part of the colony of England, there were already tensions going on between individual rights and community rights. Now, and I don't take the position, which I'm sure there are people who do, that individual rights don't count for anything and the government, you know, we should do what's good for the community and we're just little cogs in a wheel or something. My own views are that there should be as much decentralization as possible. And ironically, ICLEI, this group that carries out Agenda 21, their basic idea about how to make this work is that you have to go to local communities and not impose some, which is what had been a problem before in terms of development plans in the world that took place, not centralized development from the top down, but go to your local community, talk to your citizens, talk to your business people, and they literally, they don't talk about getting rid of businesses, talk to local business people, talk to the community, and get some idea about how you can best develop your community in a way that's sustainable. And you should take these things into account, these issues about sustainability, which we've been ignoring as a planet. We can no longer do that. It's become environmentally destructive. So here's a bunch of ideas that what other communities are doing. That's what Agenda 21 does. Here's some ideas about ways to make your community more sustainable and so forth. We're not imposing this on you. You better go talk to your community about which of these things you want to do or can make happen. Because you cannot impose the future on people. You actually have to work in a local community and get that community to decide what do they want to be like, how do they want to develop. And people in Santa Cruz County didn't want to be like San Jose, pave over all the wild lands, because that used to be a very wild county, pave it all over and become a sort of this, you know, cement palace to industry. People here thought, let's develop in the cities and let the areas outside not develop. Now, that comes down to you as they're not letting me do what I want to do with my piece of property. Now, I'm not saying the planning, I believe I was in city council for 26 years. I know that it's possible for city employees to do stupid things, to have laws that have city governments, myself included, pass a law that's not wasn't so smart. You better change it because you didn't realize what its implications were going to be. But I don't think anybody's deliberately trying to say, let's squash individual liberty or let's for the purpose of taking away your property or something. It's more, what's a plan that makes sense for the, you know, vast majority of people in this community and maximizes your rights as an individual to do what you want with your property, but not in a way that conflicts with my right to do what I want with my property? That's what I think is going on here. And I think there are excesses in this county. I face this as a city council member. There are people out there who come fill up a hall when you're trying to get a development passed on a little cul-de-sac with four houses that tell you about the traffic problems you're going to have with four houses, individual single-family homes, which is nuts. I mean, and so we have a lot of people with strange views in this community. I'm an environmentalist. I'm very concerned about protecting, as you said earlier, the air and the water, but other kinds of environmental concerns. And I often face public groups that have gone over the top defending keeping dead trees standing. I could give you a long list of the wackiness that goes on here, but I don't think that's because the government is trying to repress individual liberties or stop you from using your property in the best way that it can be used, as long as it's consistent with what the community as a whole needs to have happen.
There was an element of extortion in our permit process that's gone on for 25 years where the supervisor said, well, yes, you can build one house if you agree to not do anything with the rest. And a lot of other property owners, that's out of line. A lot of property owners near us have houses. They subdivide. They build dense developments. So there's selective enforcement. A lot of landowners here who do get projects approved are extorted. And we have heard stories of $250,000 being paid. So there's an element of beyond just protecting the environment and community rights that is very corrupt in this town.
Well, let me say, first of all, there is a difference between the city and the county, and I'm not the best person to have here to talk about county planning or what they've been up to. I'm happy to talk about the city over the last 20-25 years because I know what's going on there. So you may be right, you may be wrong. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure, again, I know that there have been situations in the city that I think have been bad planning examples, so I can't imagine that there aren't many in the county. What I hear, and it's self-serving to say it, but I will say this, is that most developers or most individuals that want to develop their property have a lot better things to say about the city planning department than the county planning department because they think the city is much more reasonable and willing to work with people and so forth. I don't know that that's true. I hear that. Maybe I hear that because I was from the city. But I won't be in a good position to debate you about how the county planning department has treated you and your property. I don't know anything about it or their rules specifically.
Well, we're in a more rural area in the county, so I think more things like this come up.
Right.
But excuse me, as far as sustainability based on the premise of climate change and global warming and greenhouse gas reductions, that's highly debatable. And you're accepting it as a premise that has to be done. And that's what all of these policies are based on. There are many controversial positions on global warming that should be expressed as well. There's a site, OISM.org, that has 30,000 scientists that have denied that climate change is caused by CO2 human beings. So this premise of having to do this and the earth is falling apart if we don't do these things is not true. And yes, Agenda 21 policies have been here since the 70s, even though it wasn't called Agenda 21. And I don't see where these policies have improved the situation. We have more violence, more murders, more crime, people under extreme stress, less opportunity for the small business person. So I don't see where these policies are working.
Well, I mean, my view would be that the policies have not been sufficiently implemented to make them successful. You know, it's a very different view. The fact that one of the things that when this group, again, this group ICLEI that I went to their conference, that's working on trying to, you know, get local communities to look at sustainability issues. One of the things that they really want to, you know, try and emphasize is how do you actually get communities to make a real commitment? And it's easy. You go to a city council meeting, the public generally shows up. It's in favor of sustainability, and it's at least in Santa Cruz. And they want you to do the environmentally sound thing. But often you don't have a lot of resources to do it, and you're making hard decisions. And so, in fact, your best ideas don't necessarily get implemented. And then, given that situation, you don't have the results you'd like to have from it and stuff. And also, City of Santa Cruz can do a bunch of stuff, but if it doesn't happen in other parts of the county or other parts of Monterey County where we share an air basin and so forth, we're not going to have the outcome we'd like to have. But I think we have had some huge successes here in Santa Cruz as a result of our environmental policies. We have one of the cleaner air basins in the country. The water that we get, generally, certainly the surface water in the city of Santa Cruz is a lot cleaner and takes a lot less treatment than you have a lot of other kinds of communities because we've stopped, not just in the city of Santa Cruz, but in all the upstream areas in Felton and up in the San Lorenzo tributaries, stopped the kind of things going on and that were polluting the water system. So I think we've had some successes. In other areas, we have not been so successful. I don't want to, Switzerland wouldn't claim that the world's like on a pathway to great success at this point. Things are looking very grim. We agree on that probably.
Well, I'm not sure that I would say that necessarily we're looking at a grim outcome. I think the grimness comes from the fact that America has globalized itself. I mean, this is not simply a local phenomenon. We've adopted membership in the World Trade Organization. We've adopted membership in the United Nations. We've adopted membership in the World Bank activities and the Bank of International Settlements and the whole funny money situation that comes from the Federal Reserve dynamic. And all of those factors are the background in which we in Santa Cruz are subjected. We're subjected as a result to trade policies that leave Americans with high unemployment rates. These rates are going to grow as our international commitment continues to expand and as our involvement with an implementation of Agenda 21 policies continue to expand. The net result of that is that the intention is that there not be enough jobs to support current population levels. In fact, the Agenda 21 program calls for a reduction of human population by 85%, provided that the world remains industrialized. They go on to say that the world population can level at between 4 and 5 billion people. Today we have 7 billion people if the world is comprised of peasants, with, of course, a ruling elite on top. The problem, again, comes down to the abandonment of the immutable principles, which are not based on community rights. Communities don't have rights. Rights belong to individuals. Powers belong to government. And in this country, powers are to be limited and rights are to be plentiful and protected to the people. And those rights include the right to life, which Agenda 21 objects to, the right to liberty, meaning you can say and do and be who you are, and the right to the use and enjoyment of property. And I think that what is forgotten by the advocates of this communitarian concept, like yourself, Mr. Rockin, is the notion that private property isn't a thing. Private property is one's relationship to a thing, the right to determine the use of that thing. And so when you impose these community rights, we'll take the county level again because that's where the land base is, and you impose these community constraints upon the immutable right to the use and enjoyment of property.
As long as you don't harm
your neighbor. And in my own case and in many cases around this county, I can think of landowners whose use of property has no effect and no objection from any other person other than the advocates of Agenda 21 who want to see the collectivization of resources, the collectivization of lands, and the abandonment of this immutable idea, the idea upon which America was based, and an idea that wasn't simply timely in 1790. It is more important today as the world's ship begins to become unraveled.
Well, again, the idea that somehow things that you can, the two of you and I share a commitment to the individual liberties, people's right to free speech, people's right to express themselves, people's right to use their property reasonably if it doesn't negatively harm their neighbors. But how you judge what harms your neighbors is very different between us, I think.
Well, let's talk about that.
Yeah, because the idea that if you were to build, for example, 30 homes on your property. I don't know how big it is or where it
is.
It's zoned
for 30 houses.
But, you know, if you were to build 30 houses on this thing, that somehow wouldn't have some impact on the people who are on the other, closer to the downtown from wherever the urban area is near your home.
Across the road.
That there wouldn't be these impacts of traffic and other things which people are unhappy about, and they come and complain to city governments about, and they say, do something about this. And so it can reach a level of absurdity. In the city of Santa Cruz, we have people who take the position that we shouldn't build any project that adds a single car trip to the city of Santa Cruz, which I think is nuts myself. But on the other hand, the idea that building 30 houses is not going to have some impact on your neighbors is I think, also ridiculous. Of course your project's going to have impacts on people and needs to have certain kinds of regulation in terms of, you know, whether 30, you know, again, if it's zoned for 30, then you should be allowed to develop whatever it's zoned for.
You're going on about this 30. I have to interject. We've never tried to build 30 homes. We tried to subdivide it into 4 lots, okay, and most recently 1 house on 70 acres. So
With zero success.
So
in how many years?
We'll thank Ellen Peary for that.
Yeah, more than that. Huh. Well, yeah, about 25 years.
Right. So, without
so
knowing the details,
we're not talking about a development that impacts our neighbors.
But and I have a question. Suppose you were talking about if the place is zoned, it's 74 acres or something, right?
Yes.
If it's zoned for 30 houses, and so what if you did want to have 30 houses?
But see,
this is a terrible thing.
Without knowing, and I don't know, yeah. I have nothing about this property. Not knowing that it's not on the side of a cliff that runs down at a 45-degree angle from top to bottom, without knowing what actual major water courses run through the property, without knowing there's all kinds of issues when you have, in theory, zoned for 30 houses or...
How do you get down to no approval in 30 years for a single house?
I have no idea about.
It's well, like that's I said, Agenda 21.
It has nothing to do with Agenda
21. Sure, it
21.
Does. Because Agenda 21 calls for the abolition of private property.
It has.
And open space.
First of all, Agenda 21 in nowhere, because I just read it last night, 300 pages of it, calls for the abolition of private property. I'm sorry.
Did you read the Biodiversity Assessment Report, Document 2 of the Agenda 21?
When I was done with 300 pages, I thought I'd read enough about Agenda 21.
The Biodiversity Assessment Report, which is part of Agenda 21, is 1,150 pages. It calls for the abolition of private property, and it calls for an 85% reduction in human population.
And we have an article on our homepage that will recite page and verse of those claims. That
Mike, I know you don't believe this. I think I know you're being a gentleman here and saying these people are sort of out of it or something.
Put words in my
mouth. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
I apologize.
But if what they said is true, if somehow something in the 300 pages, makes reference, there's a link, if you will, to use computer, language, to something else, a biodiversity tree that's 1,150 pages, and if that 1,150 page document did say something about the abolition of private property rights, would you think that's a good thing or a bad thing? I think you would think it's a bad thing.
I think it's a bad thing. I think, look, the situation, I most of my knowledge is, I read this thing last night, I've read, went on the web and stuff, but I went to an ICLEI conference, which is a group that's trying to implement, that's part of their project, implement Agenda 21. I didn't hear anything, not a thing there, about abolishing private property. I didn't hear anything about trying to impose stuff on people. There were mayors from about 200 cities at this conference, small ones like Santa Cruz, bigger ones like Chicago and Miami, and I forget Washington D.C.
That was a conference, by the way, for which press were not allowed to attend. Was that correct?
Actually, there were some press there, but there was not open to the general press, is my understanding.
Yes.
So. But if this thing is like, it wasn't like we were getting secret instructions to bring back someplace. We were being told, you go to these different workshops at the thing, which I did, went to a bunch of them, and say, you want to know more about how your community can become energy independent and not so much tied into the fossil fuel stuff from PG&E. How can you move towards wind power, solar power, things like that? So I go there and I see what other cities are doing, and I think, gosh, some of that we've already done. We were ahead of a lot of cities on a bunch of stuff. We've been doing stuff earlier, but in other places I go, oh, that would be an interesting way to try how cities could get together and become instead of one city like Santa Cruz, too small to have our own energy source, how you might join together with other cities in a region to do something. So I came away from that with some ideas about things we could implement in Santa Cruz that might make some sense. I was not, none of it had to do with abolishing private property. In fact, quite the reverse. How you can work with local business people because you're not going to be successful if you try and do this against them. So I got a very different sense of how it actually works in practice than the theory the idea that you have about it. And frankly, about whether there's a statement somewhere about abolishing private property in 300 plus 1,100 pages, I'd be amazed if in that document they're not completely, because that's my experience of reading public documents, completely opposite statements. One thing says A and the other says not A, whatever it is. Because in a large document like that, it was probably farmed out to little groups. People wrote little pieces of it. As a UN document, probably somebody from one country somewhere wrote the section that So I don't doubt if you could find somewhere in some document.
Michael Shaw.
But in the 300-page document that describes this operation, the one that they actually publish who they are, and that's a lot to say about yourself, there's not even, it's not like they sneak around the abolition of private property. There's nothing like an attack on private property.
There is. On page 767 and 782 of the biological biodiversity.
I was talking about the 300-page document.
This is a sister document that combines the policies. And when you admitted that's ambiguous and vague, you can do a lot of damage when policy is ambiguous and vague. And that's precisely how Agenda 21 is.
Look at the planning code of Santa Cruz City and County. There's a lot
of words are not defined.
The difference is the planning code of Santa Cruz County and City of Santa Cruz is a legal document that's binding on people. You take it to court, judges will decide whether you did or you didn't follow the rules. It's actual law. The stuff from Agenda 21 is not a law. It's not
a regulation in the Department of Interior.
It's incorporated from Measure C. Measure C was Agenda 21 2 years before it was approved in Rio. They match the same policies, principles, objectives in Measure C.
What is Measure C? I'm sorry.
Santa Cruz Decade of the Environment.
I'm not aware of it. It's a county.
In 1990.
Which has been readopted every 10 years by administrative fiat, the Board of Supervisors.
Okay. And that, in other words, is Agenda 21 codified.
Locally.
All right. Well, listen, I want to ask a question here. It's a pretty simple question. A few minutes ago, Mike Shaw stated that he believes the reason that he has not been able to secure an approval for even one building site on a 72-acre parcel that is zoned for over 30.
For 29.
For 29? Okay. It is his belief that the reason that he has not been able to get a permit for even one house is Agenda 21.
Policies.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Agenda 21 policies. Now, what
think
else?
It's based on Measure J that was passed in the county in 1978.
I remember that very well.
It is. Agenda 21 has just been called Agenda 21 since 1992, but the policies have been in the works for a long, long, long
time. Santa Cruz was the trial grounds.
Oh, wait a minute.
Beginning back
you guys have
70s.
Interrupted me. Let me get my question out, for God's sake. Is it reasonable, Mike Rotkin, and anybody out in the KSCO listening, I know what your answers are, the Shaws, and I know what my answer is. Is it reasonable for a 74-acre parcel that is zoned for 29 or 30 units to, after 25 to 30 years, not been able to secure a permit for even one house?
And again,
is that reasonable under anybody's way of looking at the world?
I think what I learned in government is you can't answer that question without knowing more about the details of the case. I gave you the example. If it's on a slope,
yeah, but it's not. It's reasonable property.
But I can't sit here and, again, I can't answer the question because I don't know the details of what we're talking about. So, yes, it's possible. We've had situations in the city of Santa Cruz where a person owns a lot of record. They should be allowed to build their house on it. And by the time you're done looking at what's there, it turns out it's it cannot be set back far enough from its neighbors. It's too narrow a strip, although it's got plenty of land and meets all the other regulations. So, Michael, I'm just saying, without knowing the details, I can't answer your question.
Okay. So, for God's sakes, Michael and Joanne, invite Mike Rotkin to your property.
It might well be. Invite him
to a barbecue. Schmooze him. He isn't even on the council anymore, but schmooze him anyhow. He's got a lot of powerful people.
Patton has been there himself. Didn't make any difference. We've invited all the supervisors, all the politicians. You're welcome anytime.
As I say, they may well have a case. I'm not saying that. Don't let me say the opposite as well. I could no. Honestly, I'm not. I don't mince my words about stuff. But no, honestly, I have no idea. You may be getting screwed completely, and it may be unfair and everything wrong.
But it's not only us.
We're not
the
only ones. That's the key.
You know, we can survive. So we are concerned about the people who can't have shelter here, who are run out of town. It's amazing how many people we come across that say, "Oh, I used to live in Santa Cruz. I was run out of town. I couldn't survive there because of these regulations that you're talking about that are implemented in an unfair, unreasonable, and arbitrary manner."
But back to the other thing about Agenda 21. I mean, I'll be happy to let you have a last word on it, but not everything that agrees with Agenda 21 is actually a result of some process that starts in Rio de Janeiro, or in this case, you're arguing sometime before even Rio de Janeiro.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because I know what happened in Santa Cruz County. I wrote my doctoral dissertation on the city of Santa Cruz, not the county as a whole, although I got some county stuff in there. But we developed a local movement here that didn't start from some foreign, UN agenda of some sort. It started because people in this county, it began with around environmental issues, and the movement was not even left-wing or right-wing. It was people who said, we don't want to be San Jose. I mean, I'm being, simplistic in the way I describe it, but we don't want to be San Jose. We're a rural community. We're a little town. We don't want to become a suburb of some place. We don't want to be a bedroom community for San Jose. We don't want to have this stuff going on. So what can we do about that? And that means we decided we didn't really want to have a nuclear power plant at Davenport, so people fought that. We didn't want a double-deck Mission Street, which was in the 1964 City General Plan. We're not interested in a community of 10,000 people on the North Coast that'll create a congestion traffic nightmare, which is what led to the double-decking of Mission Street. We want to have a very different kind of a community, and I don't think it was driven by any agenda that came out of the United Nations or some other place or any other meeting or document or something else. The people that did this, and I worked with these people, I was involved in this movement. They were Republican older women who liked the way their neighborhood felt and didn't want it to become, skyscrapers in their neighborhood. That was over on Frederick Street. It was young students who were full of idealism about the environment and how we needed to protect it. It was not a partisan movement, left or right. It was an environmental movement. Neighborhoods got active in this, which changed the character of that movement, so it became more than just environmental. Now there were social issues. People started thinking about affordable housing. All these things may be in Agenda 21, but they weren't being driven by some foreign force entering our lives. It was by people's own experience of what they felt would make us live in a better community.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. And a lot of our federal government, state governments, have been implementing policies that happen to match the UN. The problem now is we're intertwined, and the policies, when you examine what the UN wants and what's happening here, it matches. I'm not saying the UN came in with black helicopters. We've enabled those policies to exist. And we are turning into San Jose. Everything those measures promised and your ideals are not true. We're immersed in this one Bay Area. They talk about attaching Santa Cruz County to their big plan.
Well, let's make clear what one Bay Area is.
Oh, it's a regional plan. Regionalism, by the way, all of these plans and planning blur boundaries to erode our counties and political jurisdictions. Every one of them has that element. And one Bay Area is a regional plan blending 9 counties together as one. And then they want to pick up what they call the hinterlands.
Which includes Santa Cruz.
And we're the hinterlands.
We're the hinterlands.
If you go to a tape that we have at our website, which is freedomadvocates.org, and the first tape on the left-hand side is a 15-minute tape from a man named Paul Saffo, who is speaking at Joint Venture Silicon Valley's conference earlier this year. Now, Joint Venture Silicon Valley is the organization that brought Santa Cruz County into ICLEI Association. Ellen Peary signed the documents with Joint Venture Silicon Valley that enabled us to become under their umbrella with respect to the ICLEI organization. Now, Joint Venture Silicon Valley is proposing or is involved in this One Bay Area program, which takes the 9 counties of the Bay Area and makes it a single regional dynamic. And Paul Saffo says at this conference to 1,200 Silicon Valley executives, he says two profound things. First, he says that the Bay Area is to become, or actually is, he says already, the first American city-state.
It's not the first. There are others. He says it's a city-state that reports to the United Nations, like Singapore.
And not to Sacramento. And in the same conversation, 15 minutes again, he says that it's the 9 Bay Area counties, but we need to include Santa Cruz.
And when did this happen?
This happened in February.
Oh, this year. Okay, go ahead.
So the reality is that we take a
just
look.
Just like Santa Cruz County has been added to the original San Francisco Bay Area Craigslist.
Okay.
That's true.
Well,
yeah. Hey, by the way, multiple calls, Rick tells me. He's received multiple calls. What are the reasons you can't develop? the paperwork doesn't say Agenda 21. So what reasons are listed? And I've never seen any reason, but it's well known that if you either can't develop, like you guys have can't develop your 74 acres, or it's like pulling teeth from a cow to develop around here, and nobody knows why.
Well,
and you're suggesting that it's Agenda 21.
Sure. And let's take a look at the Santa Cruz Land Trust as further evidence of this. Agenda 21 breaks down the land use component of America into two rough categories. One's called the Wildlands Project. The Wildlands Project incorporates over 50% of the land mass in America. The wildlands ultimately are to be off limits to human habitation and off limits to resource development. This is why we're not extracting our resources in America, and why we rely on importing things in order to make us interdependent on a world society, even world government. So the Wildlands Project is a very dangerous thought for America. That's what the Department of Interior is implementing throughout this country. The other land use element of Agenda 21 is called smart growth. Now, smart growth is the stacking and packing of human beings in narrow, so-called human settlements. And that's what we're seeing in Santa Cruz. If you go down on Laurel Street, you got the businesses on the bottom, the residences on the top, and the idea is, and I'm seeing this all over the country, these kinds of units being built without garages, cars
mixed
are not welcome.
Mixed use, they're called.
Mixed use.
Yeah.
And this is the phenomenon that is driving all our population into these inner city dynamics. It's what One Bay Area is all about. It's about creating what they call priority development areas, which are strapped around the bay, and all 80% of all housing to be built in the next 25 years has to be within a half mile of these priority development areas.
Transit corridors.
Transit corridors. We have a transit corridor being developed in Santa Cruz County that takes in Live Oak and down Soquel, et cetera. These are to be stack and pack kind of housings where people are going to be encouraged to live in what they call walkable communities. All of this is straight out of the internationalist agenda, being implemented by every federal agency, now being implemented by all state agencies, and so every county in America is being affected by this, but Santa Cruz was one of the first to adopt these policies, and Mr. Rockin has been very efficient over these last four decades at implementing as a prototype these kinds of policies in Santa Cruz even before Agenda 21 was formally declared at the Rio conference. And what the point Joanne makes is quite affirming of this fact. Measure C, 1990 Measure C, which has been implemented again successfully each decade since, is the prototype for Agenda 21. And let's face it, if you're a globalist, internationalist, you want to come into America, you pick a few communities where you can try these things out. Santa Cruz, Seattle, Birmingham, Alabama, and a few other cities were those sample grounds. And now, of course, it's everywhere. And what is beginning to swarm the San Francisco Bay Area, and which is going to suck Santa Cruz in, is this One Bay Area program, which is prototypical Agenda 21 policy. People have to understand where it comes from. It comes through this Sovietized system of government called councils of government, or COGs, regionalism. Now, AMBAG is a COG. ABAG in the San Francisco Bay Area is what is producing this One Bay Area program at a cost of $250 billion of taxpayer money.
Okay, someone named Joe has texted me. It says, Mike Rotkin, our town is no longer small, and if you wanted to keep it small, why make it a sanctuary city? Ask him that, MZ. Okay, real quick. Does that have to do with anything?
It doesn't have to do with what we're doing
what we're talking about.
I think it's an anti-immigration comment.
Okay. Well, anyhow, we only have a few minutes left of hour number one here. And when someone texts me in a way that I'm not used to getting things, we had emails and so forth, I bring it up. Annalise in Capitola, Lark in Texas, Debbie in San Jose. We know you're on the air. We haven't invited phone calls, but all next hour we're going to have lots and lots of phone calls. Go ahead, Mike, real quick.
Just quickly, I want to say maybe there's not enough time
before
the
break,
I do want to respond to the smart growth issue.
Okay, KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, San Jose, it's 11 a.m.
CBS News, I'm Pam Coulter. crews continue to survey the damage from severe storms that spawned powerful tornadoes in Oklahoma City last night. A National Weather Service team found evidence an EF3 tornado struck near El Reno, 25 miles west of Oklahoma City. CBS's Anna Werner is there.
We're sitting outside of a local stockyards that's been demolished, essentially. There used to be pens for cattle here, a restaurant, a large industrial-looking building. And from where I'm sitting, the top's been completely taken off the building. The stockyards themselves are heavily damaged.
9 people were killed and more than 100 injured. The storms left more than 200,000 people without power in the Midwest and produced some scary moments for people in St. Louis.
Kate, her husband, and their daughters were telling each other how much they loved each other as they huddled in their basement, then came out to find destruction.
All of our trees are gone. Our whole street, the house right across from us, their entire roof is blown.
Mary was in a high-rise casino when the twister hit.
It sounded like people stomping in a stadium over the top of it. And the designs on the roof began to shake, and the windows began to pop.
The storm overturned trucks on I-70 and caused minor damage at Lambert St. Louis International Airport. Ryan Kelly, CBS News, St. Louis.
The East Coast is experiencing its first heat wave of the season, with temperatures spiking over 90 degrees. National Weather Service forecaster Bob Orvik on when it might break.
We do see some significant changes. The storm system that has brought the heavy rain, severe weather across the midsection of the nation is going to be spreading eastward, bringing a potential of rain across the eastern United States by the end of the weekend, and also ushering in some much cooler temperatures along the East Coast for the beginning of next week.
And today's the official start of the Atlantic hurricane season. President Obama says nearly 7 million new jobs have been created in the past 3 years, but in his weekly address said more needs to be done.
We've got to keep this progress going until middle-class families start regaining that sense of security. And we can't let partisan politics get in the way.
In the GOP address, Alaska Governor Sean Parnell says the president could create more jobs if he approved the Keystone Pipeline project.
This common sense energy infrastructure project is truly shovel ready. And yet the White House threatened it with a veto.
A federal judge says Google must comply with FBI demands for information, even without a warrant. CNET senior editor Dan Ackerman.
Your online surfing habits and all the documents that you store in your Google account, you don't have those in your house. They're stored remotely on Google servers. They're never really in your possession, which is why the government says they don't need a traditional search warrant in order to get that information.
Google says it is appealing the judge's ruling. This is CBS News.
At American Bullion, we know storing wealth today can mean a safer tomorrow. That's why investors are including gold or silver in their retirement accounts as a hedge against financial uncertainties. Rolling over a portion of your 401k into an IRA to include gold or silver gives your portfolio protection and balance. When you consider that while the Dow Jones has increased 50% in the past 10 years, gold has increased an astounding 500%. Adding gold to your retirement portfolio just makes sense. But when it comes to buying gold, who do you trust? American Bullion has an A rating from the Better Business Bureau and is a leader in its field. They offer one of the best gold guides full of information that's absolutely free when you call 800-479-2177. So get the facts on 401k rollovers and IRA transfers. Call American Bullion for your free gold IRA guide. Call 800-479-2177. 800-479-2177.
A chance to pick up some treasures in Las Vegas today.
Hey, it's hot off the evidence locker of the U.S. Marshals Service.
We're auctioning off approximately $2.5 million worth of jewelry that has been seized and forfeited to the U.S. government in federal law enforcement cases.
Jason Martinez of the Marshals Service says one item on the block is a huge diamond.
It's just under 5 carats, worth $20,000 to $25,000. And it was actually seized from an insurance fraud case out of eastern Texas.
Martinez says the money from the auction of the hot jewelry will go to the people who were defrauded. Sharon Middleman, CBS News.
And you could pick up a memento of a woman known for her fabulous jewelry. The gown worn by 8 times wed Elizabeth Taylor at her first wedding will be auctioned off by Christie's next month. It's the dress she wore when she tied the knot with hotel heir Nicky Hilton in 1950. She was just 18 at the time. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
11:05, this is KSCO Santa Cruz Online, KSCO.com. I'm Rick O'Shea with a King of the Hill traffic update. Heavy traffic on Highway 1 North, right around the 41st Avenue area. Really, it's going to start closer to Capitola, and that's going to lead you into a Santa Cruz at a stop-and-go pace. Southbound 1 is a little bit heavy right on top of Soquel. Really not nearly as bad as the traffic northbound. You'll be back up at the limit there very quickly. South 17, heavy traffic from Campbell into Los Gatos, making your way south towards Santa Cruz. Heavy, very heavy traffic on all the major beach streets around Santa Cruz and Monterey. Heavy traffic, as we will have a great deal of warm weather and heavy tourist traffic into Santa Cruz today and tomorrow. High temperatures today are going to be in the upper 80s at the coast, upper 90s inland. Another day a few degrees warmer tomorrow. 11:06 at KSCO. Before we start hour two of the Saturday special, time for the latest from Kay's Whirling.
The following is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay's Whirling.
As a longtime resident of this planet and a lucky native born of this incredible country, I need to speak out about why our United States, once the hope and promise of the world, is rapidly becoming weaker and unable to live up to its past expectations. It is our own goodness, generosity, and trusting nature which is destroying us. The topic is assimilation versus diversity, and it is in my book. Let's roll back the clock to around 1913, when my own European extended family was part of the greatest influx of immigrants to the United States. In the late 1920s, as a child, I saw how proud and grateful my family was to be here in America, where they saw the hope and opportunity non-existent in their native country. The one abiding desire of all immigrants at that time was to quickly learn to speak, read, and write English. In short, to become truly American. That's called assimilation. That desire to be American in no way diminished the love that newcomers had for their own culture, history, and national language. They knew it was their responsibility to keep their own heritage alive, and they never expected their newly adopted country to do that for them. Fast forward now to the early 1960s, when immigration surged again from Mexico, Korea, Japan, China, Vietnam, and many other countries. It was then that the notion of diversity became very popular, and it was celebrated ad nauseum by the politically correct left. Always motivated by feelings, never reality, the left felt that it was wonderful to have this mixture of cultures in the United States, and in many ways it was true. However, the left, in its enthusiasm, felt that as a country, we the people were responsible to help these newcomers keep their respective languages and cultures alive. Big, big mistake. So, what happened? Since that time, most new citizens came from Mexico and spoke only Spanish. Our public education system, led by leftist educators, created English as a second language, whereby Mexican children receive most of their education in Spanish, so their parents and they did not have to learn English. They remained primarily Mexican but lived in America. That's called diversity. I call it disaster. Now let's fast forward to 2002, like now. As a result of 40 years of diversity and the rejection of assimilation, many immigrants still do not understand English, but they do have the right to vote, so our voting ballots are now in many languages. This is stupid and wrong, and it's weakening and destroying the identity of our own country. It's time to demand that to vote, one must read, write, and understand English, and all ballads must be in English only because English is our national language. For KSCO, this is Kay Swirling.
Okay, I guess we're back here and entering hour number two of the KSCO Saturday special. And let me bring up the wave cart here so we can start it out officially, because I just feel so naked, you know, before we've started out, you know, any section of the programming on the Saturday special without having the right jingle. So here it is.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back. KSCO has the inside track.
I got a nice email that says, MZ, you asked a very nice, simple question, but let me finish later.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
All right, here it says, MZ, you asked two very, very clear and explicit questions. Okay, good. And MR, Mike Rodkin, is a typical politician a la Henry Wallace of years past, etc. He does not answer your questions. Perhaps his next answer may be to take the fifth. Now, RM, who wrote that, is that a kind thing to say? I mean, what are you talking about? I mean, wait a minute, Mike, let me turn your mic on.
Did he say what the two questions were?
No, and I forgot what two questions
one of,
were.
Well, one of them was about the sanctuary thing. I'm happy to talk about it. It was just off topic.
Yeah, it was off topic. But let's not talk about it. That was dumb of me to even bring that up. It's just, like I said, it took me by surprise. I've never gotten a something pop on the screen like that. It made me think that, holy Christmas, you know, maybe Joe has taken over our whole computer system or something. That's never happened before. So I was so shocked and horrified that I read a question directed at you that didn't even belong in the program. But anyhow.
Well, maybe you misunderstand. Maybe the person who's asking the question thinks there's a link that I don't get or something.
All right. That's look, Annalise called in 41 minutes and 42 seconds ago.
That's patience.
Lark in Texas has been waiting for 24 minutes. We're going to get to the callers, and we're going to be mostly callers during this program. I could see that this is something that needs to be – we're going to need a lot more than 2 hours on this. But we're already almost jammed on the phone lines. But it is very, very important for me to thank our sponsor, the California Grill Restaurant at the corner of Freedom and Airport Boulevards. I was there this week, and I had an incredibly delicious Hawaiian Ono sandwich. It was on a croissant, and it was the grilled croissant was just the crunchiness was just so, it was superb, and the fish, which was a Hawaiian fish, was encrusted. It was encrusted with macadamia nuts. Is your radio wet? My microphone is wet from all the drooling, just thinking about it.
It sounds really good.
Really, really, really good. Now, that was a special, and I told them that was so good they should put it on the regular menu, and they said they'll think about it. Okay. So I don't want you going there asking for that. Well, go ahead and ask for it. Yeah, go ahead and ask for that, and then they'll say, yeah, that way I could build a big case. See, you made a lot of people mad because they went there. MZ talked about it on the radio, and it wasn't there.
Their other food's great, too, from what I hear, and I'm going to get in there soon.
Yeah, no, it's really, really good, and I don't see any other business in Santa Cruz or Monterey or KSCO land sponsoring the KSCO Saturday special.
There you are.
So you should let these people know that you really, really appreciate what they do, okay? And you should go into every other business that you know, and you should chide them for not doing. Well, no, never mind. We don't want to be negative. We only want to be positive here on the Saturday special. All right, that's one thing. So that's California Grill, corner of Freedom Boulevard in the Freedom Shopping Center in Freedom. Freedom Boulevard and Airport Boulevard. All right. I have a quiz for you folks. Anybody, who's the first person to answer this quiz? What is the foundation of good health?
Can I answer?
Yeah.
I would think good nutrition.
Yes.
I would join that answer.
Specifically.
Oh, the longevity products?
Yeah, the
Healthy Start Pack.
Yeah, okay. I was
the
explaining.
The Healthy Start Pack.
Yeah, the Healthy Start. Finally, someone has put it all together into one pack that it's got it all. It's got everything, okay? It's 90 for life. What does that mean? 90 essential nutrients. Everybody needs 90 essential nutrients to live a healthy, long, and disease-free life, okay? And you might not believe what Doc Wallach has been saying forever and ever and ever, ad nauseum, right? That everybody who dies of natural causes always dies of a nutritional deficiency-induced disease. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do believe that, and I have believed that. Now, the best vitamins in the world aren't going to help you if you get hit by a train or a truck or something and you need surgery. We all know that. But so many people are walking around, dragging around, being unhealthy, looking sick, acting sick, not having energy or any energy or anything. This Healthy Start Pack from Longevity is the ultimate. It's got everything you could possibly need, and they finally packaged it properly. So I'm putting out the word that we bought a bunch of Healthy Start Packs here at the radio station, and we're going to be distributing them from here. But what I really want to do is not distribute them from the radio station. I want to distribute them from various convenient outlets in KSCO country. And Warren Knox, hi, folks! Remember Warren Knox of Knox Roofing? He was here this morning here in my office. And he heard about this.
You have
and
a career in Mimic. That was good. That's Warren Knox to a T.
You want me to do my Rush Limbaugh? I haven't done it in a long, long time. Okay. Boy, talk about a town that needs the Rush Limbaugh Award-winning radio program, Santa Cruz, California. Well, never mind. Enough of that. All right, so the Healthy Star Pack is going to be available at certain special locations, and of course they will be KSCO advertisers because they will believe in 90 for life. Warren Knox picked up five Healthy Start Packs himself, and he's going to have them available at his place up in Scotts Valley starting pretty immediately here. So I just wanted to put the word out, and if you want to call Dave Michaels during the week here, during the Happy Hour program or during the Rich Lieberman program, then you can arrange to get it from him too. But we're going to make it really, really easy for people to be healthy. All right, back to the Saturday special. Why don't we stop? I'm not going to feel guilty about this at all because we didn't really invite phone calls, but now we're going to invite phone calls to 479-1080. That's in area 831. Annalise in Capitola has been waiting a long time, but now she's on the air. Hi, Annalise. Thanks for waiting. You're on.
Good morning, Michael. And I wanted to thank both the Shaws and Mr. Ritkin for coming on this program, because I certainly think it's something that needed to be discussed. Probably about 3 weeks ago, I brought up the concept of Agenda 21 because I was very concerned about the idea of the privatization of land no longer being allowed to be handled by the public, and the concept that the smart growth is the stacking and packing of people, where it was put out even in a automobile club periodical. This was about 6 months ago. I became very aware of it. They were advocating this as a wonderful idea to put people in small communities, not allow them to grow anything. But don't worry, they'll provide you your transportation. You'll live in this little community. You shouldn't go out of that area. In fact, you'll no longer really have roads out of your community. You'll live in your community. Another community will live a ways away from you. And the rest of the land that isn't stacked with people in these convenient little pockets will be turned over for wildlife, whether you like it or not. And you won't own your land either. The government will oversee it because, of course, the community will be already drawn out and decided on, and you can just have this piece of land. You can operate through a bus system or perhaps a train system, and that's the way it'll be. Now, those who can't afford to get involved with this, well, they just sort of drop off the map. So there is this concept which is consistent that the Shahs brought up of the 85% reduction of population. It, by the way, is part of NATO. It is not law, but it is an agenda they go on with. And, you know, as far as communities respecting even the people within the community, Mr. McKinn, I have been part of trying to help Watsonville allow the people to vote whether they wanted fluoridation in their water or not. They were wise enough, or at least became educated enough, to know there was a difference between the kinds of fluoridation and the kind of fluoridation that was going to be put in their water was actually injurious to their health, and they knew it. And they voted against it, and guess what? The city decided they would go ahead and fluoridate the water with exactly the same fluoridation these people were against. So much for people even educated about something, being allowed to have what would be under a democratic situation, the voice of the people to be heard, wasn't going to be allowed. I was very discouraged with that. I also took part here in Santa Cruz in having the smart meter program limited, where people had an option to opt out if they didn't want a smart meter.
Yeah, but they have to spend. They have to.
They did do that in this county. They did do it.
Oh.
It was after quite a bit of argument and presentation before the county, and I can tell you, we were certainly to be treated as if we didn't know anything. We came in with all kinds of information. Marilyn Garrett, who is very well known as a public speaker, spoke on this. But the idea of the privatization of land by the government is not new. It was even in Automobile Club periodical about 8 months ago, 6 to 8 months ago. They had a long article. They showed you what it looked like.
Annalise, that's why I own the radio station. Back in 1988, I was doing a radio program here. It was the only talk show on the otherwise fully music-programmed station. The talk show was called the Citizens for Planning Reform, or CPR talk show. That's where I met Michael and Joanne Shaw,
right.
25 years ago, because that was in 1988. And that's the reason I heard that the station was for sale, and that's the reason I own the station, is because of the damn planning departments in the city and county of Santa Cruz. But I don't feel like I've been at all successful, or we've been at all successful, because it's just as bad 25 years later. Some might
say
it's worse.
That's because government is so strong, and Mike Rytkin is, although I...
Not Rytkin, it's Rotkin, damn it!
Oh, well, you don't need to swear at me. All
no, really.
Yeah. The difference.
It's okay.
Thank you. You can do that with a little more, you know, a little more grace, Michael, but Mr. Rotkin, here's what you see.
What other host gets scolded on his own program?
But and is gracious enough
line,
to accept
you know
it.
What?
She's right.
You had no compunction of bringing people down with amazing kind of language, Michael. And so yes, if it's a free, democratic, interactive radio phone line.
Radio.
Then, you know,
we should move on, Michael. She was right. You were a little over the top, and
okay.
You should accept it and move
right,
on.
I do.
And you know, Michael, I really wanted to say I hear your voice in wanting to make things fair and to have an equal community where the community moves for the betterment of all people. I think that is a wonderful concept. But the idea that individual people wouldn't move that direction on their own without the government overriding and making it almost unbearable, as Michael MC just said, is probably short-sighted, because people will move in a community to make things better for many people, even for their own self-preservation.
Well, I think the way we make communities get better is to adhere to the American notion, the traditional American notion, which I think Mike Rotkin was dissuaded against as we began this show. The idea that human life is best lived when government is limited in its power and where the people's rights are predicated on the Lockean notion of natural rights is the system that holds promise, the only real promise for humanity. And that's what we need to return to. It's not a democratic system. It's a republican system in that government's powers are limited. We don't vote on whether or not to hang our neighbor. He has certain natural rights that need to be respected by us. We elect democratically some representatives who then hold certain limited powers and that preclude them from destroying our life, our liberty, and our use and enjoyment of property.
And we don't disagree. This is Mike Ronkin speaking. We don't disagree about that. The issue is to what extent we agree that there should be limited power for government and that it does not have the right to decide everything for everybody and that that would be wrong and not attractive to me as a vision or something of the way things should be. But we disagree about to what extent there needs to be some involvement of government in our daily lives. And I think it's a dramatic difference between the level at which we needed government engagement on things that affect us in 1790 and now. And that's where we seem to disagree. I'm not against the principle that that people retain individual rights no matter how much complex things have gotten, and that government therefore doesn't have the right to tell us what to do, either as individuals or even as neighborhoods. But the idea that we have the same practical ability to do whatever we want as individuals and now as we did in 1790 is not realistic, given the fact that we are much more interdependent, not because of some ideology, not because of some mistaken idea about things, but because of the way the world is practically developed. Because it turns out now, given our economy and given our world, seniors aren't looked after by their families. Not because families are evil or because they don't care about their parents or something, but because they don't have the ability to do it, given the way our jobs are structured, the way our housing lives, because we don't live on farms where extended families can be supported. Our kids need to go to school. They need to get an education, and not just third grade, but all the way through higher ed, if they're going to be economically productive in the way that the world is organized. Now, not everybody has to do that, but a significant number of people have to have access to, and it shouldn't be based on your parents' money, should have access to higher education. So you're going to need taxes that you didn't need in 1790. You're going to need to have people regulating an economy, which didn't need regulation in 1790. There was some monetary regulation, but you don't need the kind of stuff you need now. We need people to collect statistics on unemployment. I don't know how many hundreds or thousands of people are busy doing nothing but collecting statistics that allow us to understand what the heck's going on. You certainly didn't need to have anybody doing that stuff in 1790. And so where we disagree, I think, is not about whether individuals have rights, whether I agree with you, a representative government with limited powers. It doesn't have, power does not derive from the government. It derives from the individuals agreeing to be part of a community or part of a society together. But you're going to have a lot more government intervention in your life, given the complexity of our economy and our world, than you had when everybody had their own farm.
And I have promised that we were going to get to the phone. So you guys want to talk? Can you do it in like 20 seconds?
I can say something.
I want to get to Lark in Texas.
Community rights are the big issue, and maybe we can have that another day.
Yeah.
Because that's the element where I think Mr. Rock
the rights of the individual versus the rights of the community.
Right.
That's base of everything. Okay. And okay.
We agree that's a fair debate.
All right, so let's go to our next caller, who is Lark in Texas. Where in Texas are you, Lark?
I'm in Dallas, Texas.
Oh, okay.
Hi, Lark.
Thanks for calling KSCO. How is it you're listening? Are you vacationing there, or are you doing a business there, or do you live there?
I live in Dallas. I've lived here for a long time.
You used to listening to KSCO from there?
Well, I'm familiar with the work of Michael Shaw.
Oh, okay. All right.
So I received a notice that he was going to be having a debate with Mr. Rothkin, along with his wife Joanne, and I thought, well, I would say a few words if the opportunity arose.
Go for it.
You're welcome.
Great. Okay, thanks for calling.
I've been studying communitarianism and communitarian law since 2004. And I recognize that communitarianism is really nothing more than a synthesis of what we call capitalism, corporatism, mercantilism, and communism. And this is what communitarianism is. Communitarian law is that which is practiced amongst international corporations or transnational corporations conducting business across national boundaries. And it's the type of law which is practiced at the International Court of Justice at The Hague. What I have come to the conclusion with is a simple tripartite equation. because communitarianism is a pure variant of socialism, or what we call world socialism, even totalitarianism, I say that socialism equals gangsterism equals slavery. Now, here's my question for you folks. Now, I consider that the communitarians have wielded this mind virus via this word, community, like a weapon. And when I hear it propounded by all the smart guys in the room, I feel daggers being thrust into my heart each and every time. I consider that because socialism equals gangsterism equals slavery, that the gangsters, which is the who are the racketeers and the members of organized crime that the so-called community is trying to force me to join, is really an encroachment. And here's my simple question. Now, I want to seek protection from somewhere, from someone, from some powerful group or entity, because I demand the same rights to life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness as a prairie dog. In other words, I consider that...
Clark, please ask your question. We got a bunch of other people we need to get to. Just ask the question twice. You said, now here's my question. You don't give the question, so give it already.
Sir, I just posed the
CBS
question.
CBS News update question. On Cam Cole.
The question is who is going to protect me from the community, who I consider are nothing more than a cabal of gangsters?
Great question. I'm the lousiest host in the world because I should have made him say that 10 minutes ago. Go ahead, you guys. Great question.
Well, I would say, first of all, thankfully, we do have a constitution that protects at least a large number of those most important rights that you've got. And the honest answer to your question is nobody but the community can protect you and everybody else, me and everybody else, ultimately from the excesses or issues of where, you know, the problem, the concerns you have about where things might go in terms of repressing your individual rights. I can't by myself defend those rights. I mean, I could, you know, as some people might think if you get a gun, you'll be protected. But believe me, whatever your views are about gun rights, one person by him or herself with their gun is not going to stop the problem that you're talking about. If we need to figure out what are reasonable community decisions that can be imposed on all of us, that we impose on ourselves because it's for our collective good, versus the ones that we say we don't want the community telling us what to do. Leave me alone. I want to decide that for myself. And the issue of where we draw that line between our individual right to do what we want, when we want to do it, and how we want to do it, versus when we have constraints on that by law or by custom or something else, that's something that a community makes decisions about. Where I probably agree with the Shaws and disagree with a lot of other people is I'd like that community to be rather small. I'd rather not have some meeting taking place in Rio de Janeiro or anywhere else that tells me ultimately this is where we draw that line. We know the answer to that question. I don't mind somebody in Rio de Janeiro meeting together and saying, here are some things we think are important ways that communities can defend themselves, protect themselves, provide for a better environment, and so forth. But when, in fact, it crosses that line, and this is where, you know, I certainly would agree with them if I believe this were the case, and I don't. When that kind of activity reaches the point where it becomes coercive and somebody somewhere else is making decisions that I have no involvement in, then I've got a real problem with it. So I believe in decentralized decisions made by, but I do believe in decisions made by communities together, because ultimately I can't decide by myself where should that line be drawn. I would always draw that line for myself way too generously in a way that imposed on my neighbors.
Okay, real quick, Mike.
Sean. Well, I'm going to respond by pointing the audience to the Santa Cruz County Local Agenda 21 document. It's not 300 pages. It's about 100 pages. It was prepared in the 90s. It's called a Sustainable Community Action Plan, Our Agenda for the 21st Century. This final draft was considered and adopted by the Board of Supervisors and Santa Cruz County Municipalities. If people want to read this document, you can find it at the Research Center at freedomadvocates.com.
.org,
I'm sorry.
And I know I've probably seen that, but honestly don't remember the document. But I do remember the process that led to that, which was a bunch of people getting together, not through the government or something, but individual groups. It was a bunch of local citizens decided they wanted to see if they could work on the issue of sustainability. And they put together a bunch of meetings, and people talked about, well, how would we like Santa Cruz to develop? What kinds of things do we think make sense for our community? And they talked about these things, and it was pretty widely involved, people from businesses, local businesses, and citizens groups and nonprofits, and just individual citizens and neighborhood groups met together on this, and they had a bunch of neighborhood meetings. And when they were done, they took it to the county, and the county thought, this makes sense to us. We think this is a good vision for where our county could develop, and then they adopted it. The plan itself doesn't actually, again, have teeth in it. It's not like they can make you do X, Y, or Z. It makes suggestions for the way things should develop.
It's being implemented, and it's the case in point where the community is determining what should happen with other people's property, businesses, et cetera. That is not the American way. And that's where community rights and the community decisions can affect individual rights.
And I was on the Agenda 21 committee back in the 90s, and Mike, your characterization of who was involved is completely inaccurate. These were outsiders. These were wild people with crazy ideas. It ended up in a document that has been adopted by our local government agencies, and it is being implemented.
And there were a lot of people that looked like normal citizens that were recruited, and their input was ignored in the final version.
I met with my neighbors, six of us. Somebody, suggested we meet, sent us a little. No, we didn't have any outsiders. It was everybody that lived in within five blocks of me or four blocks of me. They sent us some materials to read over about some of the issues we should discuss and come to our own ideas about what might make some sense. We were then asked if we would write up a report of some kind about what we concluded from our discussion, and we turned it in. That's my experience of that process.
Well, okay, all I can suggest for the public is that the Agenda 21 program is live and well in Santa Cruz County, as is evidenced by the Santa Cruz County Local Agenda 21, a sustainable community action plan, our agenda for the 21st century.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines. We want to thank Lark in Texas for waiting and for his comments here on the Saturday special. Our next caller is going to be Debbie in San Jose. Debbie, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks so much for having this conversation, and I have a question for the former mayor. I actually went to the Rio Earth Summit last year. I'm a cattle rancher's daughter, a farmer's daughter in California, and you said something earlier about how the communities need to be involved in what the neighbors are up to. I'm telling you, as a cattle rancher's daughter, I am a community to Santa Cruz, although I might not be a next community. But your plans, and this is why I ran for Congress against Jackie Speier, the people that we have elected or the people who now are running the show are not looking at the bigger picture. And I've read the Global Biodiversity Report. I've read Agenda 21. I've read the documents locally. And my question for you is, how could you be making plans in your small group of whatever diverse people or whatever, and not know, for example, that our government now wants to destroy dams? This is in the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report. California is going to have the largest dam removal in history. That's going to impact the water on everybody. They want to release wolves, Canadian gray wolves, over 470 in Siskiyou County alone. They are impacting Clean Water Air, Clean Air Act, on farmers and ranchers. And yet all these plans that the cities are developing are to protect more open space. Well, that open space is my parents' private property, and who are you to say how we protect our land, and who are you to say that I can't reap from the benefits of my parents' hard work, and that I can't live off what they've created? I don't understand how you and our politicians now have that power, and you create communities around you, and you create special interest groups who are now controlling how my parents live their daily life, and my parents provide food and fiber for the public. We provide a public good, and I'm outraged, as you can hear, and concerned for our future, because I think we are being thrown to the wild land, and I say before you make any more decisions, you need to read all the Agenda 21 documents, as Michael and Joanne have mentioned. They are long, they are extensive, and they are very thorough on what is planned for human beings in the future.
All right. Thank you, Debbie. Wow. For your passionate phone call. We really appreciate your calling KSCO at 479-1080. That will open up a line. Our next caller is going to be Steve in Santa Cruz. Steve, you're on the air on KSCO.
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
I may have tuned in a little bit late, but I believe the issue is these folks are trying to develop 70-acre parcels.
Well, no.
That's
this
an
is
example a, of a bigger question.
Yeah, this is a program about the Agenda 21 concept. Go ahead, Steve. We don't want to take too much time. I know who you are, and I asked you to call in, so thank you.
It's a question. I've been in the same situation for 2 years developing a piece of property. What they don't like about it is put in the form of objections, and these people were given a list. And on this list, I have two questions. Did any of those objections have anything to do and printed to them Agenda 21? And what are the objections of the county? Period. Answer the question. Please.
Well, the question, I think, is best answered. You know, 30 years can't be summarized in 2 seconds. But the Santa Cruz Land Trust has new maps that evidence the Santa Cruz Wildlands territories. These are, approximately 50% of the mountains are, according to the land trust, lands that is deemed to be acquired by the land trust, taken by way of conservation easement, or coordinated with the planning department for the purpose of regulating out land use. Now, the reason our land is not being able to be developed is our land is the only parcel west of Highway 1 that is included on these maps. And so there is a cabal in Santa Cruz. The land trust is certainly part of it, and that cabal has arranged an outcome for private landowners, and that outcome is what's being implemented by the planning department. That is the source of the problem that we have encountered and fought for the last 30 years.
What is the list?
Well, the list, you know, in our case, they don't give us a list. They simply say, we want a conservation easement on your property before we're willing to talk to you. So it's extortion from ground one, and they say, well, you've got a lot of native plants on your property. Well, the reason we have native plants is I've spent decades with a large crew with daily weeding programs that have converted this property from a weed lot into a native plant lot. And so that just causes them to drool and say, you don't get to build a house unless we get a conservation easement that controls 95% of the landscape.
Sir, I appreciate all of what you're saying. One, all the regulation and control, it's 66410. Regulation and control of the design and improvement of subdivisions are vested in the legislative bodies of local agencies. Has nothing to do with Agenda 21, please. You know, you're not spilling all the beans. You're not giving the right, you're not giving the whole story. Get a land use attorney. I mean, this is simply what you're saying. I don't buy it.
Fine.
Well, should we tell him? Should we tell him, Mike?
Go ahead.
Yeah. He is an attorney.
Oh.
Yeah. So. And he's one hell of a attorney. Plus, he also a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, Michael and Joanne Shaw won a landmark property rights decision in the county of Alameda. Close to $1 million, which I think they're going to appeal. Is that right?
It's $2 million.
$2 million. Oh, sorry. Wow. Yeah,
they're
not close.
Cut them in half there.
Right.
The county of Alameda.
Yeah.
Will probably.
Yeah. You're not talking to just anyone's fool, as Miss Tomlin of the telephone company would say. You're talking to the Shaws. So.
Hey.
All right. All right. Well, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. That was Steve in Santa Cruz. Let's go to Rich in Salinas. Rich, welcome to KSCO. You're on the air.
Hi. A wonderful topic again, as usual. A couple of questions for both of the parties there. But, you know, I was looking at the skies the last couple of weeks and all these planes flying over, dropping our chemtrails on us, which is also part of Agenda 21. And I was thinking, you know, if those were Pakistani planes flying over, we'd probably be shooting those down like the planes we send over Pakistan to get the terrorists.
You obviously haven't been speaking to Dr. Bill Wattenberg, the smartest man in the world.
He
will tell you that that's nothing but condensed ice crystals. It's not.
Okay.
It's not,
okay. Yeah. But there's plenty of websites out there you can look at what's going into the barium and the aluminum and the rest. And it's no different than the fluoride in the water Annalise mentioned. And you've mentioned what Mr. Rockin about clean water. And we got fluoride in our water. Go to fluoridealert.org and you can read all about our fluoride and how Hitler used it and pacified the population. My questions, though, to the two of you, Mr. Rocket, what if Michael and Joanne Shaw are correct in what they're telling you? What if you're just either not aware of this, you're either part of the solution, which you need to be educated, or you're the problem, and you're creating the problem? I would suggest that you work with Michael and Joanne Shaw for 30 days, let them educate you on everything they can throw at you, and you read it, and then come back in 30 days with another program on Saturday, and you can discuss what you've learned and see if you change your mind. And as far as Michael and Joanne, what would your lives be different like if you had developed 1 to 30 or 1 to 29 houses on that property way back 30 years ago? Would you be involved in all this stuff? Would you have a different life? Would you have a better life? Because they have taken your life away in the last 30 years.
That's right. Yeah. Should I let Ms.
Go for it.
Our life, we've had a lot of circumstances in our lives that point to us understanding Agenda 21. But that aspect of the Santa Cruz County Planning Department was a catalyst in understanding more. It was actually a little neighborhood plan that came into La Selva Beach that alerted me to Agenda 21. And then everything started to make sense after I explored it and researched it.
My question. First of all, with your permission, I won't let you plan my education about what I need to have happen. I was happy to be here today, and I will now go do some more research about the work that the Shaws have done. But I don't think I have 30 days to dedicate to this at this point. But thanks for that suggestion. But your other question, which is, what if they're right and this is all going on and there really is attempt to paraphrase the thought that we're on a pathway towards totalitarianism because people are starting slow, but they basically have a vision for how the communitarian values are going to like take over and remove all of our individual rights. If I thought, and I'm wrong, that is going on, and I just don't understand it. I haven't studied it carefully enough. Well, obviously, if that were the case, I would have a very different view of what I should be doing. I don't share that view. I don't think we're on that pathway. I think Agenda 21 is a well-intentioned effort to suggest to people things they should take into consideration to plan sustainable communities that will be healthy and happy places to live. And I think that's an important contribution to our future. Maybe I could use this opportunity briefly to talk about smart growth. The Shaws obviously see smart growth as a plan to shove us into dense little human settlements, inappropriate ways for us to be living. For me, the idea about smart growth is how you can actually have people live in livable communities where they can see their neighbors, where they're not stuck in big either choice of either sprawled out single family homes out into the countryside, which is environmentally not sustainable and destructive, or on the other end, it's crammed together in big apartment buildings, and that's what I think is sort of Soviet style, if you'd like, or whatever. And the idea of smart growth is to have communities which have two-story, three-story at the most townhouse-type buildings. It's not the only kind of housing you want to have, but that we need more of this is the argument, where people of moderate means can afford to buy, not just rent, buy a home, have access to play areas for their kids, be on major transportation corridors so they don't need to drive their car everywhere they go, which is crazy. But it doesn't mean that you don't have a right to own a car. Every smart growth project I've seen has got a place where you can put your car. It's just not designed around, you know, the garage is the center of the palace where you live. The car becomes secondary, and your ability to walk to where you shop and to know your neighbors and to have frontage on a street where you could sit on your porch and people could see you rather than the idea of these little gated communities which are totally isolated from others. And one of the other callers had this idea that somehow we're going to have these will be isolated little smart growth communities. I don't know anything in smart growth that suggests that. Probably the Shaws wouldn't even be as pleased with the extent to which most smart growth folks think about the need for some regional connection, the fact that we live in a regional economy, and that none of these little smart growth neighborhoods are going to actually be self-sustaining or unconnected to the rest of the world. So that fear that somehow the ideas, little gulags, or I don't know what exactly it is not how I see smart growth. I think smart growth is something that makes a lot of sense, and I've found that when we've done some of that smart growth in Santa Cruz, and people like those little neighborhoods when they get built, and they are a sort of human scale, unlike either these huge apartment complexes, which in urban centers, which I think are not an attractive place to live, in the sense of, you know, overbuilt and, you know, dirty and everything else that everybody imagines when they think about a downtown New York street or something. Or on the other end, the impossible vision that each of us will have a split level ranch home on an acre of property, because that's not sustainable. We cannot put the property, the people in Santa Cruz in all that kind of housing, even in this little county.
I have to disagree with Mr. Rotkin in the setup of these smart growth apartments, because I have personally talked to people who cannot have a car. There's no room for them to have a guest. They become depressed. There's a woman who wrote to us, said, I have to get a permit to have my grandchild sleep over at my subsidized housing. There are restrictions. The walkability means people can't drive over the hill to their job. They have to have what kind of job in these box stores that are going up all over the
place? I don't know any smart growth, any, not one example of a smart growth community that doesn't allow at least one parking space per unit. So
go to Chicago.
Yeah. All right. We got fewer than 10 minutes left here, and we have Richard, Thomas, Jan, and Kathy in Canada. Kathy in Canada? All right. Well, and we got a bunch of emails here. Here's an email from Costanza. Hi, MZ. Great show. Extremely important topic. We need to keep talking about this. Just wanted to say one look at the Agenda 21 map will get Rotkin up to speed. Thanks, Nancy and Carmel. Okay, other ones real quick here. This has been the best 2 hours of radio I've heard in years. Thank you and your guest. That's from Matt and Ben Lomond.
Thanks, Matt.
And let's see. It's taking a little longer here on the computer to bring up. Anyhow, says Rick Bowen says, MZ, ask him who Maurice Strong is. See attached for his opinion. It will blow your mind. Ask him who. Ask who? Mike Rotkin?
I don't know who he
is. Yeah, you know who Strong is, right?
Sure.
Okay. Alrighty. You know what? No time. There's so much. We need to have a whole series. We need to have a whole program that we produce from here and gets picked up by other stations and the internet and everything. Because this is how the community, talking about communities, you know, can really, you know, have ongoing discussions about things.
This issue is burning in communities all across America now. I mean, fortunately, the work of some people across the country has really brought this issue to the forefront in towns everywhere.
Right. Better link for you and especially Mike Rotkin. www.morningsun.org/index. This sort of stuff are the results of following the footsteps of the greatest leader of China, Mao Zedong, and his little red book. For, what does it say here? For Pitt's sake, maybe it's for Pete's sake, Mike Rotkin, whom I'm always referred to, Rotkind, please wake up and be an American and stop all these commune, collective, and communist thoughts, etc. Try to immigrate to China or the Soviet Union with your small groups as legal immigrants and not just tourists. Why won't Rotkin let his neighbors enjoy freedom and privatization that they worked hard their whole life to achieve? And that's from Juliana Cheng, an immigrant, a naturalized American citizen who always gets mixed up as an illegal immigrant or mistaken as an American born in the USA because I have a heavy accent and I am not Caucasian. Thank you very much, Juliana. Bob Champion says, may I pick a nit? Oh, God, this is very long here, I don't think. The question, why do we say some foods are healthy? They're healthful and they are healthy. Okay, this is not for the program here, unless I'm missing something. Annalise, you go girl. I'm glad to hear Annalise in her element. She usually comes off as a sourpuss, but get her on a topic and she is passionate about that. And she's like a bulldog. She's a great advocate against fluoridation and smart meters. She needs to learn how to say radio. And she would be much more effective. Okay, good. Let's go back to the phone lines. Make sure everybody gets on. Let's take Kathy and ask her if, are you really in Canada, Kathy?
Yes, I am, and I live in a tiny little rural village in central Ontario, central eastern.
How is it you're calling this KSCO Saturday special in Santa Cruz,
California? I'm calling because there's going to be lots of Canadians listening today because Michael's newsletters go all over the place, and people here in Canada are fighting like heck, too. There's very independent research and people approaching their councils all the time, more every day. And there's a little document. Absolutely, they're on this like a dirty shirt. Ontario has been very hard hit with this. And so just so that Michael knows, be nice to see more cooperation between the people fighting here and the people fighting down there. A lot of us here.
Okay, you're fighting a common enemy, right?
We absolutely
are.
What
is that enemy? How would you describe that enemy?
It's the local. Okay, basically, what we're finding a real hard time dealing with is the strategic planning process for the local implementation of Agenda 21. That it has stripped the people of having any say. So when you talk about decisions by the community, that doesn't mean decisions by the people. And we're working, a lot of people here have become aware of a nice little booklet called A Municipal Primer on the United Nations Conference on Environment and Development. Excuse me, it was published in 1994. And it was prepared by the Federation of Canadian Municipalities and the Canadian Council of Environment Ministers, or Ministers of the Environment. And it's priceless. It goes through the whole implementation process.
Oh, okay.
So
wow.
It's documented. And we even have it in both English and French. And the Canadian researchers are going like, great guns.
Right.
So it'd be nice to see more cooperation, because Canadians are they're working independently. There's very little in the way of groups.
Great idea.
So
let's move in that direction.
I'll let you
Thank
go.
You for calling, Kathy, in Canada. Here's Richard N. Watsonville. Richard, you're on.
Thank you very much, Michael. Michael and Michael and Joanne.
Yeah.
I think I covered everybody there.
You did. Thanks
all,
for calling in.
Yeah, Michael Rockin, first of all, I wish you guys would bring back the transfers on the bus system. That's a shame to get rid of. We can't even have a transfer to transfer to another bus anymore. But I wanted to know. My question really is, this Michael Shaw has 70 acres of land. If that 70 acres of land was in your city of Santa Cruz, what would you do with it? What could he do with it? What would you let him do with it?
It would depend where it was in the city. And just to be clear, the first thing that would have to happen is a discussion with this property owner and ask, what do you have in mind? It's, you know, but 70 acres in Santa Cruz would be huge, and you know, we don't have anything like that. That's why this
very
is more,
huge.
That's why it's more of a county issue that they're talking about, I think, than city, because we don't have a lot of rulers.
You deflected it, though, Mike. You deflected everything off to the county.
Well, no, it's like Michael Z. Go ahead, sorry.
No, here, let me just ask my last question. Do you
Please.
Think Santa Cruz County and Santa Cruz City should be one and the same like San Francisco?
No, I really don't. I think we have four cities in this county, and I believe in as much decentralization as is possible.
You believe in Capitola?
Yeah.
You were on the city council and let the east side go to Capitola. I even heard you say you regretted the tax increases you voted on that ran the city car dealerships to Capitola.
Those decisions were made back in the early 70s, long before I was ever on a city council. We haven't got time. We got 3 minutes left. I'll just say,
right,
I don't think the city and the county should be combined, because I like the idea of having government being as small as possible and as many decisions being made locally at the neighborhood level where possible. First of all, at the individual level where it doesn't interfere with other people, at the neighborhood level, after that at the city. And so I'd be in favor of Aptos, for example, becoming a city, because people there should have that kind of local government that they don't have right now. And they're urban enough to be a city.
Okay.
Whereas maybe it doesn't make sense to make a city out of La Selva Beach. It's not quite big
Thomas
enough.
Thomas in Santa Cruz, you're on the KSCO Saturday special. Quick.
Hi, Michael and Michael and Michael and Joanne, I believe. Thank you for this program. It's wonderful. I know it's a real short time. I want to defend Michael Rockton. He spoke passionately. I think he spoke truthfully. I think he spoke from the heart. I think people with 70 acres can be a corporation that can hurt us all. I know there's not enough time to discuss that.
I'm flesh and bones. I'm not a corporation.
There are. I understand that, but corporations are run by flesh and bones also. And
aren't corporations people?
70 acres does affect the rest of us in the mountains because of the water problem, and there's not enough time to discuss that. I just want to say thank you to Michael Rockin, and thank you to the show, because I know you believe
in what you're saying, but I think Michael Rodkin is a well-thought-out, caring man who needs to be defended and listened to, because I don't think he was listened to today. Every answer I heard him was intelligent, caring, and well-thought-out.
Thank you for your generous comments.
You're welcome.
I appreciate the call, Thomas. And our last caller is Jan in San Lorenzo Valley, and there's only about 30 seconds. Sorry, Jan, go.
Hi. Michael Shaw, basically the reason you can't use your land is it's zoned for 28 parcels. Is
yes,
that right?
29.
Hurry.
Well,
10 seconds.
The county is probably drooling over it. This is all about locking up all the resources, the timber, the water, everything. They want to take it all away from us, get us off the land, move us into the cities. It is Agenda 21. The problem up here is they've created such a fire danger that it's really...
Thank you, Jan. That's it. That's the end of the program. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Joanne. Thank you, Michael Rock. And we got to do it again. We didn't even scratch the surface. That's it. See you next week, gang.
That's all, folks.
You're listening to KSCO Santa Cruz Salinas Monterey and KOMY and KMPH. I think it's 12 noon. Here is CBS News.
CBS News, I'm Pam Coulter. It was a night terror across the Midwest. Violent storms and tornadoes left a path of death and destruction. But KMOX reporter Brad Choate says people in St. Charles County, Missouri, consider themselves lucky.
They dodged a bullet, they think, that nobody was seriously injured and there were no fatalities. They think that, a lot of that stuff can be rebuilt that was torn up last night, and they just... They're thankful that nobody was hurt really bad.
They were not so lucky in Oklahoma City. 9 people died and more than 100 were injured. KWTV reporter Rusty Surrett.
There were many homes that have been destroyed, a lot of businesses that took a hit. We saw cars and 18-wheelers that were just tossed all around along Interstate 40 that runs right through Oklahoma City.
In nearby El Reno, Mayor Matt White is urging people to stay away from hard-hit areas.
The police department and the fire department are trying to get in and assess these areas, let them do their job. There'll be time to look at the damage later and just try to get all the information to us.
Hurricane season officially begins today, and Atlantic Coast residents are being urged to prepare.
I'm Peter King. Forecasters expect an above-average hurricane season. National Hurricane Center Director Richard Knabb says some of the forecasting improvements should also be above average.
We are pushing forward with more products and warnings that focus more attention on the individual hazards and where they could occur, what you are vulnerable to in this particular storm.
NAB is talking about things like improved storm tracks and warnings for storm surge and flooding, which were Hurricane Sandy's biggest demons. He says some of those warnings could be tried this year, but they're works in progress. He says they should be permanent by 2015. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
Fire crews are battling 2 wildfires in New Mexico. State forestry spokesman Dan Ware says dozens of homes have been evacuated near the blaze 50 miles northwest of Albuquerque.
Right now we're looking at about 800 acres on the Thompson Ridge fire, and this fire popped up very quickly yesterday. It was started by a tree striking a power line and then the power line sparking and causing the fire.
Officials say the uncontained fire near Santa Fe has blackened 8 square miles. A second suspect has been charged in the hacking murder of a British soldier in London. Police say 28-year-old Michael Adebalajo is accused of killing Lee Rigby and trying to murder 2 police officers.
Holly came from Miami, FLA.
Lou Reed, co-founder of the iconic 60s group The Velvet Underground, is recuperating after a liver transplant. His wife, Lori Anderson, told a British newspaper the 71-year-old rocker was dying before the operation. The surgery performed at the Cleveland Clinic. While not back to full strength, she says he's already working and doing Tai Chi. This is CBS News.
If Dad hasn't already spelled it out for you, this Father's Day, he wants new golf gear. But don't worry, because the only word you need to remember to give Dad his day is Golfsmith. With exclusive Father's Day deals, gift-giving expertise, plus a huge selection of the latest and greatest clubs and accessories, Golfsmith is your destination for everything Dad. Because the gift that never stops giving is a better game. Give Dad his day, only at Golfsmith.
Does your business thrive by serving other businesses? Would you like a healthy, steady flow of B2B leads that are customized to grow sales? Hoovers has developed a best-in-class lead generation tool that makes it easy for you to find targeted leads for your business. You'll be amazed at how easy it is to get the right leads fast. Try it today for free. Get 50 free leads and a 24-hour trial. Just call 800-601-7780. 800-601-7780. 800-601-7780.
Some new wine producers in Italy aren't allowed to sample their own product.
A group of Italian inmates on the remote prison island of Gorgona have become the country's most unlikely vintners after producing 2,700 bottles of white wine, a blend of Vermentino and Ansonica grapes. They were given wine-producing tips by the Frescobaldis, one of Italy's oldest and most respected winemaking families. The prisoners will not be allowed to taste the wine themselves, but it will go on sale next week in restaurants and wine bars. Sabina Castelfranco, CBS News, Rome.
A yacht with an impressive pedigree is going on display in Beaufort, North Carolina. Dockside tours of the Honey Fitz begin today. The 92-foot yacht was christened in 1932, went from private hands to the U.S. Coast Guard, and saw service in World War II. It was used by Presidents Eisenhower and Kennedy and is now privately owned. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
KSCO News Time, 12:05. I'm Rick O'Shea with a traffic and weather update. Highway 1 northbound, stop and go from Aptos into Santa Cruz. Finally getting back to the limit just beyond Morrissey. Southbound 1 is going to be heavy through the SoCal construction zone as well. It gets back to the limit in between, pretty much just after SoCal. SoCal overpass by 41st Avenue and Capitola. South 1 will be at the limit. South 17 slowing down. As you head through Los Gatos, it's going to be heavily backed up from Campbell into Los Gatos. Had an earlier crash right at Highway 9, resulted in the off-ramp being closed. This accident happened 1 hour ago. Traffic, again, backed up to Campbell. Getting closer to Santa Cruz County, Highway 1, 17 as it goes into Highway 1 on the west side, the Cabrillo.